pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Pat.
Bowman.
Present.
Shoup.
Here.
McNaughton.
Here.
Moblo.
Here.
Needhammer.
Here.
Nemechek. Place.
Here.
Jeff Ross.
Here.
Monica Ross.
Here.
All right. Let's move on to consent agenda. Did Tim get a hold of you at all about not being here?
Okay. I did send out a notice for the historic commission meeting coming up, and he responded saying that his uncle passed, and I'm not sure if he's distracted with that or not. But,
okay.
But he didn't request it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
All right. I don't have any other. We have our representative from the school.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Tom, for pointing that out.
I can't remember. What is your name?
My name's Alexis, but you can call me Lexi.
Lexi. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
All right. Does anyone want to make a motion for Tim? Okay.
If he didn't request.
Did he ask to be
excused? He didn't ask. Excuse.
Okay.
Let's move on to the approval minutes from August 16th, 2021.
I will make a motion to accept the minutes as presented.
Any discussion?
I will second.
I've got a motion and a second by Skyler. A roll call, Pat.
Jeff Ross?
Aye.
Monica Ross?
Aye.
Bowman?
Aye.
Shoup?
Aye.
McNaughton?
Aye.
Moblo?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Place?
Aye.
All right, let's move on to hearing citizens present on non-agenda items. Lexi, do you have anything to...
You should bring something.
No, I...
How was your school day?
No, it was rough.
Rough, yeah. All right, let's move on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees.
None.
All right, unfinished business, there is none. Move on to new business, public hearing proposal for a zoning ordinance amendment to eliminate 500-foot separation requirement for bed and breakfast locations.
As you may recall, the Planning Commission recommended that we move forward with the ordinance amendment to eliminate a 500-foot separation requirement. This is also recommended at the City Commission, so it looks like it's well supported to move forward. So I did propose this eliminating that item G in its entirety, and then renumber the next paragraph. And so I submitted that to you, and with the ordinance criteria for review, which is under 2168B, which was a number of criteria that you should consider when you look at this ordinance amendment.
Okay. I'll open this up to the public. I'll close to the public and bring to the board for discussion. Scott, just quick, so if somebody wanted to have a bed and breakfast in Boise, they still have to come in front of the Planning Commission, is that correct?
Yeah, the only provision that is being amended is that separation distance, all the other standards and the requirements would still be in effect, and it is official use, so yes, they would have to come in front of you.
That was exactly the question I was going to ask. Thank you. Oh, that was what was on my plate.
What's a tourist home, definition of tourist home? Well, it's in the ordinance. I don't have that right in front of me.
Okay.
But basically, it's where a number of unrelated persons can be housed as guests for a short period of time with services rendered to them for breakfast and other things. So it's going to be mini hotels, I guess, would be the best way to explain it.
Okay. All right. Is there any other
Yeah. Just one more clarification, and I apologize.
Yep.
So in Section A, it specifically says the owner of the building has to be the manager. They can't, like, hire a caretaker, correct?
That's correct.
According to the ordinance. it's an old ordinance, it's probably irrelevant, I'm just curious. It is pretty specific that it needs to be the owner of the residence, correct?
Owner of the being the manager.
Owner-occupied, yes.
Yeah, okay. Perfect, thank you. No more questions, thank you, Chair.
Sure. Any other questions from them?
I just wonder, there's a lot of rules and regulations in here, and I just wonder what happens in the future. You know, we have 200 short-term rentals in town, which is pretty close to a bed and breakfast, right?
Except for short-term rental, the owner doesn't have to be on site.
Right. So what's the point of all these rules and regulations if 200 other people can do whatever the heck they want?
Well, no, they can't do whatever they want. Basically, it's still regulated by the district. And in the traditional residential district, it's single-family dwellings. So there isn't a limitation on how long a dwelling can be rented for right now. So it still can be used for that use, for a day, for a week, or a month, a year, mm-hmm. whatever. A bed and breakfast is where, like I said, it's like a mini hotel where you have a number of unrelated persons that can stay there. You can
right.
Four, yeah. Six, eight, 10 people. Now, there are instances on the bigger houses where you may have this happening, but, you know, in a large part, they're pretty much used as a single-family dwelling. And that's the major difference.
I guess I'm just wondering if maybe we should look at this again if we ever do get a short-term rental ordinance, which, who knows, with political situations.
Since 1988, we've had 3 applications.
Right.
And this isn't really, breaking down the door to do this. So
absolutely.
If there comes a point where we get a lot of applications for this particular use, I would suggest that. But for the time being, I think this takes care of the immediate issue where the folks wanted to put one in. Mm-hmm. And if another one comes along, maybe we'll look at it again. But right now, I don't think it's necessary.
You'd almost be crazy to even want to do this.
Well, it's a business within a residential district.
So are all those other 200.
Yeah, but
until
the city commission gives us direction as to how they want us to handle that,
right.
It's not really
which is why just maybe we ought to look at it again after that, or at the same time, and say, well, all these rules make sense. And, there are differences, obviously.
Well, yeah, we could, if we were told, hey, we've got to figure out a way how to regulate short-term rentals within Boyd City, this is something we could co-opt into one. But let's look at that later.
Did the existing bed and breakfast get notified about this? And did the potential that applied and didn't get approved because he didn't meet the requirements, did they get notified about this?
I am in contact with Ms. Grimm, and I let her know that this process is moving forward. Mm-hmm. And if it does get adopted and implemented, then I'll contact her and let her know that.
Good. Okay.
Thanks, Scott.
Do you feel that the removal of the 500 would open the potential for this? You know, I think of for generally a bed and breakfast, it's a larger home. It's not just your average 400 two-bath home. So you look at where those houses are in the city, and a lot of them are on State Street. So if you have a 500-foot removal, then obviously that opens it up, right? I mean,
I still don't think, you know, the demand.
Right, no, absolutely, I agree. But I'm just saying it would potentially put that still a residential set, business, mixed use per our, you know, future use type thing. So that that would fit.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have one more question.
Yes, Tyler.
To the best of your knowledge, Pat, are the other communities in our area, like Shottaway, for instance, do they have a similar restriction in their ordinance, do you know?
I didn't look specifically at Charlevoix, but it is a typical kind of regulation to have bed and breakfasts at the special use.
Right.
And a lot of these regulations, you know, came about in the 80s, 90s when bed and breakfasts were more being implemented. So I would suspect they have something very similar to some kind of process.
I doubt they have the 500-foot because there are several, like, across the street from each other and down the street. So I'm guessing that they don't have...
So it would be more in line with other communities in the area. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Thank you.
I'm kind of, I've already said this in the last meeting, I'm kind of thinking that this elimination of 500 feet is fine, and every other district except the traditional residential district, we've got homes in the central business district, we've created a new mixed use in the master plan. If we want to implement that, that takes care of the applicant. You know, we've got office areas and whatever that, yeah, residences. I mean, you know, if, because Ms. Mobley, your question, Nicole, about where is, yeah, State Street, I'm looking at what one back from Front Street, further down, a lot of larger homes there.
Terrace.
Those are prime locations also.
Yeah, the Cedar Street's up that way too. It has a lot of those older Victorian eras.
Right. So, you know, I'm in full agreement of eliminating it in all districts but the traditional residential. So, just as was stated, I mean, it's commercial use in the residential district. And I'm big on keeping residential neighborhoods together. It's, you know, I think I like knowing my neighbors and I like having, you know, predictable traffic.
So I don't understand what you're saying, Larry, that you could have you're okay with having bed and breakfast in a commercial district?
But not in a residential? No, I'm fine with having a bed and breakfast in a residential district, but I agree with the 500-foot spacing.
Okay, so you're not going to, you don't support this then?
I support changing it for everything except the residential district. So you can, you know, just rewrite it permitted in the TRD district, so there's no operation, you know.
Well, I think the very essence of a bed and breakfast is it's in a residential neighborhood, isn't it?
And in eliminating it, you're basically eliminating a burdensome requirement.
Question?
Agree.
The problem or issue which these changes intended to address cannot be accomplished in another more appropriate fashion. There's no other way to change this particular regulation while open amendment. The proposed amendment would correct an error in ordinance. I don't think there's any error there. The proposed amendment would clarify the intent of the ordinance. I don't think that's applicable. Documentation has been provided indicating problems and conflicts of implementation or interpretation of specific sections of the ordinance. I would argue just the opposite, that there are no indications that there are problems or situations occur, you know, that this ordinance is preventing.
Well, we're fixing the problem, which is 500 feet, because somebody wanted to do it.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Do you know if they would have something to reapply after this?
That was their intent. But the proposed amendment would address changes to county, state, or federal regulations. That's not applicable. The proposed amendment would address potential legal issues or administrative problems that the ordinance based on recent case law or opinions by the Attorney General or the State of Michigan. Again, not applicable. The proposed amendment would promote compliance with changes in other city ordinances and or county, state, or federal regulations. The proposed amendment is supported by findings of reports, studies, or other documentation on functional requirements to contemporary buildings, practices, environmental requirements, and similar technical items. Not sure you can say that this is supported by that, but I would say that based on evidence to the contrary, that the 500 foot really isn't accomplishing. And other criteria is determined by the Planning Commission or City Commission, which would protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public, protect public and private investment in the city, promote the nation, the goals, the policy, and the comprehensive plan, and enhance the quality of life in the city.
Does anyone have any questions about these at all? Discussion? Okay.
I have just a quick question. If you don't have the B&B, is there's no limitation on how long they can stay, correct? So it could potentially be utilized as a long-term rental, which we need more housing anyway. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I don't think that's the business model.
Right, I know that's the business model, but you know, yeah.
If someone wants to stay there for a month,
a pandemic on our hands. We are in great need of healthcare providers. Those are generally not just a week or three days. It can be upwards of 3 months.
There's no limitation on how long someone can stay at that time.
I think this would be wonderful for those that want to utilize it and then provide housing,
Sure. Either
short term or long term.
Yeah. I gotta just throw it out there. Somebody. I'm not sure if I can get behind fixing the 500 feet because I feel that we have the upper hand and we should keep that. And I kind of view it as vacation rentals. One could pop up every 700 feet or just start popping up. And we don't even know. Maybe half some of these vacation rentals turn into B&Bs.
Well, but they'd still have to come in front of us. And one of the things we could say is that, it doesn't fit the aesthetics of the area because there's two B&Bs right next to each other. I'm just saying.
No, there's one. That's all I'm talking about.
By doing it this way, it still has to come in front of us. It's still something that's discussed by the board, and people still, hey, does this really work for this location? And so there's already some checks to it. What it does is it gives us the freedom to kind of figure out what's best for the time in which people come into us.
Well, and in the case, that it is right now. We had somebody come to us and wanted it, and we had to turn them down because there's another one within 500 feet. And that's legally a bed and breakfast, but the owners don't use it for a bed and breakfast. Yeah. So it's too burdensome, too many rules that are unnecessary, in my mind.
And I agree, on the surface, it looks, for those of us that are apprehensive about the number of vacation rentals in town, I think the biggest difference between this and what we're seeing in terms of VRBOs is that this requires a tremendous commitment from the applicant and the willingness to stay there and basically be there the entire time that tenants are there. This isn't an absentee landlord kind of situation. And that's the only reason I'm a little bit more comfortable with being willing to strike the burden part out of the ordinance, because I agree that we still have some control over it.
And as Aaron said, if the neighbors would be notified, and they could come to a hearing about this, and if they think that it's not appropriate for the neighborhood, they can make that case, and then we make a decision.
I would hesitate in saying that just neighbors coming in and saying it's not appropriate for the neighborhood, it's not the character of the neighborhood. Those are very subjective things. We have to watch out and deny something for extremely subjective reasons that, you know, it's...
Right, but
it needs to be a finding of fact that it would not be able to be done based upon the written statements within the ordinance. So, you know, I agree wholeheartedly with Jeff that by rights, then breakfast is less invasive than a short-term rental, because, you know, you're not going to get the wild and crazy parties, so, you know. All hours of the night. But, so I mean, I think that there is going to be very, very little that can be done if you've got a bunch of them together, because we have stricken this, and you know, neighborhood character is extremely subjective. So I think you have to really watch how that.
Well, but if you want to judge strictly by facts, we don't have any operating bed and breakfast in the whole community.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, what are we afraid of? There's going to be a whole bunch of them all of a sudden.
Which I'd rather have them than the short-term rentals.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I agree 100%.
With an owner-occupied person there, and it makes it a lot more sense.
Plenty of parking spaces in the ordinance.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Which is not for any other short-term.
I know that it come up about like Terrace Street and some of these other areas with the larger Victorian homes, but some of these parks in this ordinance, they couldn't do if they wanted to.
Right, yeah.
They couldn't provide off-street parking for all these people. I probably have a few houses in town you could. I mean, literally, I could easily. Except for the mass number of people already in my home.
I think it could even enhance the neighborhood. You're encouraging a
guest to spend the night in your neighborhood. And that's exactly what a good neighborhood is all about, is guests that want to stay and walk downtown and live a pretty quiet blend in the quiet neighborhood. So I'm in full favor.
Thank you, Chair.
All right, at this point, do we need a motion for recommendation to the City Commission?
Yes.
It's all moved.
So, my motion to
accept the change.
I'd second it.
All right, roll call, Pat.
Monica Ross?
Aye.
Bowman?
Aye.
Shu?
Aye.
McNaughton?
No.
Moblow?
Yes.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Place?
Aye.
Jeff Ross?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Coming in from the City Commission's next meeting.
The next available agenda, I will put it on there for first reading, and then we'll come back a month later for the second reading.
Awesome. Let's move on to the staff report.
A couple of things. Touching on the short-term rentals, I got contacted today from Granicus, the people that we hired as a consultant for the address identification, said that they're ready to do the training. So me and Patrick will do that training to work with the data on their online platform. They said they have about 154 units that they identified, which is a significant reduction from the first time that they assessed how many were in the city. Last October, I asked for a free assessment from these folks, and they identified like 280 some, with 250, I believe, as unique units. The number of listings, and because some list on multiple websites, that's why there's more listings than there are units. And then when we first engaged them back, like May, they estimated about 220 units in town, and that's what they based the contract on. Now, today, they provided me this information that this looks like they have about 150, 160 units in the city. So it's a very curious trend that
do we pay less then?
No. But it's a year-long contract. So it's based on that first assessment, and it can go up and it can go down. And so we'll have it monitored for an entire year. See, maybe it's a seasonal fluctuation. Maybe it's a trend down. Who knows? I don't know. But like I said, we did this assessment last October, and they had way more. So I'm curious to see what.
I do have to touch on that. I know some people do. Like I got a friend of mine. He lives in an all-winter, but yeah. He rents it out there for the summer.
Understood. I know that. Yeah. They're seasonality too. Yeah. But it just seems like this trend is down. So I don't know if more people are relocating up north to get away from cities, yes. And now that they can basically work from anywhere, and that's some more.
They're using their short-term rentals now as their home.
Yeah, they're calling them Zoom towns. So
Zoom towns, I like that. Yes. But maybe the economic model for only 2 months of rentals is not working.
So that's as we delve more into this data, we'll hopefully get a clearer picture of what's going on.
And so we can train on how to
Able to use this data, and then my vision is to be able to extract it and implement it into our GIS system, and then be able to look at, okay, here's how many we got, here's where there are. Because I think that's an important criteria as well. I know there's a large number of the condos that are typically seasonal homes that are used for short-term rentals. And then, there's ones in the traditional neighborhoods that are, basically taking dwelling units off the market
So what is that impact? So that's what I'm curious to see.
Now, how far back is the data that they take? Is it just up to what's just recent, or do they look back?
They look back, and they have all listings, and they have active listings. Okay.
So can they tell you how much revenue house?
They can estimate it, because basically they have, you know, the rental dates on the websites, and then they can calculate like a maximum amount of revenue that would be from that if all these dates were done. They can't verify if they've been rented all those dates. So by using online reviews, they can determine when places have been stayed in. And they can come up with estimates of rental amounts for, you know, units that way. So they can give you a range of what they think, you know, a typical property is created.
So you don't know if the 154 reflects the waterfront or not?
No. You know, we have 28 units at the Water Street Inn. So right there is, you know, a large portion of them. You know, when I was doing my list, you know, I found a lot at the Landings, found a lot at the Harbridge, you know, the Harborside. So there are, you know, a lot of the condo units. And maybe 20% of those condo units are, have 100% of PRE on them. So, you know, those are all, basically all are already second homes. So, you know, I did find in the neighborhoods that, you know, over the past 5 years, there was a trend of more being converted to homes. But that number that I found was between 30 and 50. And probably, you know, 20% of those were, you know, had a PRE on them, 100%. So they were owner-occupied. So they may have an accessory unit or something that they were renting, or they would go out for a month and then come back and that kind of thing. So they still live there.
But by getting those dates, those estimated dates, you could further investigate whether those ones that are 100% PRE are actually being utilized at their primary homes.
Well, you can have a short-term rental and still have PRE 100%. I talked to the assessor about that. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're not claiming another home, you can claim that one. So,
because I got one in my neighborhood and he rents it probably like every week, the whole summer, on the waterfront. He claims it as his personal residence. It's got a rental in there right now.
Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you know if there's been any more uptick in city police reports?
I haven't talked with Kevin lately in regards to that, in regards to nuisance complaints. Historically, I don't get very many regards to short-term rentals at all. Maybe one, two a year. It's usually parking or trash or, you know, rarely noise. Those usually happen after hours if they do, and police department gets called, so I usually get called if they're, you know, they got their trash there or parking in somebody else's place.
And most of
those are few.
And most of that already has ordinances that address those issues.
Yeah, we have nuisance ordinances that address those kind of issues, but in my mind, that's not the primary concern in the short term rentals. I mean, I don't see that being problematic. I mean, what Larry touched on about neighborhood character, obviously that's one, you know. Sure, they may not be nuisances, but you don't know your neighbors. And, you know, that kind of neighborhood fabric, that does degrade the short-term rental. A bigger concern that I had as a charge of the city commission was the impact of housing. What is it? And so I think now we get some good data, how many units are being turned into short-term rentals in our neighborhoods. Is it 1%, 2%, 10%, 30%? You know, who knows? You know, I think it's probably around 3 to 5. But
how many total housing units in the city?
Right around 2,200.
Okay, so if it's over 200, then it's approaching that 10% threshold.
Well, that's where it comes in important to look at what units you're talking about.
Well, and that's the
that's
thing.
What I'm saying.
Is the data going to be separated?
Yeah.
Between condos and single family.
That's where I upgraded my GIS system, and then we can map where all these units
summer.
Awesome.
So, you know, if you have, you know, like I said, 10% of the housing units, okay, and of that 10%, 90% are on condominium units.
That's a different issue.
That's a different issue.
Exactly.
So.
Well, I know that if we have, and it isn't just short-term rentals that are affecting these 2,200 housing units. I know when I moved up here, as selling real estate, you have a whole different perspective here because there were over half of the residential homes or properties in the city that were not primary residences. Over half, I'm pretty sure.
I think that's the situation for the county as a whole.
Yeah, and so, I mean, all right, I'm guilty of it for many years. I owned a house up here, not my primary residence, but I used it as a vacation home. And so I never rented it. And so it wouldn't be in your VRBO study, but there are a lot, and I would say close to 50% of your houses here fit in that category. When you consider all the condos that are part of these units and things like that, because it's a whole different world up here as far as primary residences. Of the primary resident, and some of those are also rental units. They can be long-term rental units, and they still would not qualify as a primary residence. But they may be a full-time resident lives there. They're just not the owner.
Right. Like,
so in coming up with that 50% that I'm judging, that's included in that. So,
well, according to the 2010 census, it was 21% were seasonal units.
21%?
21%.
That's all. That seems very, very low.
But that's in our city limits.
Oh.
I still think it's very low.
I think what you got to find is a lot of the waterfront and some of the higher, larger homes are going to be much more seasonal.
No, yeah, but I mean. Mm-hmm.
Well, in all fairness, I have a very unique perspective on this, considering 90% of my clientele fit that bill. Almost all of my customers live in vacation homes that they don't reside in permanently. However, that trend is changing rapidly.
Yes.
You would not believe the en masse number of my clientele that have moved here permanently to get away from Grand Rapids, Detroit.
And we had somebody at Team Boyne last week that talked about this, and they said that the just putting TruStream in the rural areas has enabled a lot of people to just, like you say, to become,
Zoom down.
Zoom down.
And those people now can live here year round when they used to be a vacation home, and now they can live here year-round.
I met a lady last week that they moved from Seattle to here all the time. Her husband still works for Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Seattle.
They're from both of my neighbors.
Oh, okay. Oh, she did say you were her neighbor.
Super, super nice.
Yeah, and
they're from around here, too, though.
Yeah, well, they've always had a vacation home in the area. Family has.
David's dad lives right around the corner.
Yeah, and... But she said, now my husband just flies out to Seattle when he's needed, and we can live here all the time.
Get center.
And I think you're seeing more and more people like that, and not necessarily from Seattle, but from all Chicago, over. Detroit, Grand Rapids. You know, I met another lady who, as she said, they moved their principal residence here to Boyne City, but they maintain a residence in Grand Rapids, and they residence in Florida, but she said my principal residence is here in Boyne City.
School district was down 3 years in a row. This year it's up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with the expansion of flights on Travis City Airport,
that is
hugely helping.
So the next steps with this, once this I'm able to get this data and present it, at the last city commission meeting, it was suggested that as opposed to just bringing something to them and say, hey, make a decision, to have more of a community outreach and try to, you know, get some input prior and hopefully have a full picture of exactly what the impacts are, good and bad. So I'm still trying to wrap my head around how to do that. But I'm thinking it will probably take place at probably some kind of planning commission meeting, maybe some kind of special meeting, something public. I'm not quite sure how
to do a joint meeting.
Well, I'm not sure if the city commission wants to be involved in that. They'll probably come to it, but I don't think they want to have a meeting as being part of that.
And I think a lot of it has to do with if you approach it from an education standpoint of not just presenting the data, but educating like what.
Yeah, and it may not even be good to have a meeting where, you know, you're here and they're there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's more of a kind of a work session where just kind of you can make a little talk and, you know, and maybe get some ideas. So still working on that.
We had one city commission meeting where the audience was very much against Airbnbs with examples, and the next month we had, it was stacked the other way. So you can't. You know, I think our community is pretty well divided.
Yeah, and like Dean said, no one was wrong.
Right.
Everyone made an excellent point, and they were all verifiable facts that they were saying.
Because our economy needs places to stay.
Yeah. Right.
We just need to make sure that it's decently controlled.
Well, what are the impacts? What are the negative impacts? And what do you do to mitigate those?
Mm-hmm. What's the state's status on the bill?
I haven't seen any change. Last I checked, it's still kind of in the holding pattern. So,
yeah.
It seemed like there was momentum behind something, so it wouldn't surprise me if they do pass something, but in its current iteration, I'm not sure.
My big thing has always been just the housing issue that we're making a whole lot of changes to the ordinance to promote housing, affordable housing. Housing for our employees, and it just seems so strange to see this come off, these things come off the market and not be used for employees and things like that. Well, like you say, you have the same issue with seasonal residences.
Basically, what I found out when I moved up here, and we had a management company in our office for a while, and a lot of her customers were looking to rent their properties here 6 to 8 weeks a year because that was a sufficient amount of time to cover their non-homestead taxes and their maintenance of their properties. They really weren't in the game to have it rented every week. They wanted to use it. But if they could get 6 to 8 weeks a year of rental income, that was enough to cover their non-homestead taxes and any maintenance or utilities they have.
Interestingly enough, a lot of ordinances on short-term rentals do specify a maximum rental amount per year, and it is in that 60-day range.
Hmm. 60-day range that they can rent it?
That they can rent it out, yeah.
And still claim it as a...
Well, no, that is still allowed within the ordinance to have a short-term rental. The maximum rental period for short-term rental is 60 to 90 days.
Oh, I get it. Okay. Yeah.
And that is an interesting ordinance requirement.
Any other thing I want to touch on? The housing summit? Virtual again this year is 19th through the 21st. I think there's going to be some recorded sessions and some live sessions. They do have a number of speakers, and I think that some will be available for Q&A. I'm not sure how they're going to do the registration this year. I believe last year, like a municipality could register and a number of people could view it. So I'll check with that, and if not, then we'll see if anyone wants to go register and get you a pen.
Okay. For October 19th?
October 19th to 21st, through 21st.
And do you have the times or not?
They're daytimes, but like I said, there's probably some sessions going to be recorded, so if you can view them, make your
okay.
I think last year I had it on the model because I mean, because I was listening, I had no problem listening to it, because I had given the information and still doing design work, so it wasn't too bad.
I wish I could do that, but I'm healthy for that kind of
What is this on the chair?
That's all I have, Jim.
All right, go to the order. Scott, Fox Run, how's that going forward?
I talked with them yesterday. They are anticipating starting the infrastructure work. The drain commissioner is raising some issues. Whether or not he has jurisdiction, I don't believe he does.
Okay.
Basically, the drain commissioner is in charge of county drains. Mm-hmm. There are none. So he is more in placing himself into the administration of the stormwater ordinance, which the city does have intergovernmental agreement with them to administer that ordinance. So I'm not sure if he's doing that for the county. But in that charge, our ordinance allows for the system that they are providing, which is to have on-site retention that overflow into the city system, which is exactly what they're doing. I think they'll hopefully get that worked out without any issues, but they do anticipate getting the infrastructure in here shortly, and then hopefully start putting homes on next year.
Is there been any discussion of reverting the it's not mobile home anymore, but manufactured home ordinance back to the density that is further matching the state density?
Yes.
Rather than the 10 per acre?
Yes. Okay. And I was going to do that when we developed the next ordinance amendment, because it was one line, and I should have done that with this one, but I forgot, so.
Any updates on the lofts on Lake Street?
No, but Marilyn Crowley is one of the speakers at the housing summit, so maybe she'll have a Q&A and ask her.
They just put in a 5-story building in Grayling.
They broke around.
Yeah.
And that was kind of just a few months ahead of the city when they started that process. So.
5 stories. Pretty big thing for Grayling.
Yeah,
really is.
Yeah.
They completed the one in Cadillac, started the one in Grayling, so that gives me some optimism that we're next on the list. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or coffee.
All right. Anything else, guys? Mm-hmm. All right. At this point, I just need a motion for adjournment.
So,
I've got two motions and a second.